Thank you. I want to read poems today that start with the first poems that I have written and that are now in a book of selected poems, and to go on from those into poems that are now in manuscript and that I'd be very happy to read in their first reading with you. The first group of poems are three poems, and they are poems that come as so many, I think, of the beginning work does, out of the sources, even the negative sources, of what we know. In the beginning, the processes seem to be wide open. And one of the problems, one of the pleasures of working in language is to keep very near to the processes and to the terms of process. And doing that consciously, I myself have found how small a language there is for process, for growth and development as itself, and in its own rhythms, and not as a series of points, not taken as we hear about time very often as a series of points, but taken in the terms in which plants grow, animals grow, people grow, emotions grow. The things we react away from are as deep a source as the things that we move toward in all of this. And when people say, what books, what poets have been an influence on another poet, you can see that very clearly by looking at the early poems, certainly, and actually by anything that is made, that things that are done in our period have to do with movies as much as with other poems, have to do with music as much as with other arts, have to do with kinds of meaning in their motions in poetry. And it seems to me that the music that people have talked about as being the music of poetry has a great deal to do with the kind of process that I've been trying to hint at, and that the movements of these meanings, the movements themselves, are what give poetry its music. For me, silence itself, silence between people, seems to have been one of the sources. There seems to me now, looking back, to be many beginning things about the wish for communication rather than communication itself, the wish for form rather than form itself. In the beginnings of many lyric poets, you can see in their early poems a candid form, a clear and easily visible form that penetrates all the work and that makes a music of meanings that goes on in that poet. But there is another kind of motion in which the drive toward these things govern them. And it's in the light of those meanings that I'd like to read this group of three poems. The first one is called Effort at Speech. Speak to me. Take my hand. What are you now? I will tell you all. I will conceal nothing. When I was three, a little child read a story about a rabbit who died in the story. And I crawled under a chair, a pink rabbit. It was my birthday, and the candle burnt a sore spot on my finger, and I was told to be happy. Oh, grow to know me. I am not happy. I will be open. Now I am thinking of white sails against a sky like music, like glad horns blowing, and birds tilting
and an arm about me. There was one I loved who wanted to live, sailing. Speak to me. Take my hand. What are you now? When I was 9, I was futilely sentimental, fluid. And my widowed aunt played Chopin, and I bent my head to the painted woodwork and wept. I want now to be close to you. I would link the minutes of my days somehow to your days. I am not happy. I will be open. I have liked lamps in quiet corners and evening poems. There has been fear in my life. Sometimes I speculate on what a tragedy his life was, really. Take my hand. Fist my mind in your hand. What are you now? When I was 14, I had dreams of suicide. I stood at a steep window at sunset, hoping toward death. If the light had not melted clouds and plains to beauty, if light had not transformed that day, I would have leapt. I am unhappy. I am lonely. Speak to me. I will be open. I think he never loved me. He loved the bright beaches, the little lips of foam that ride small waves. He loved the veer of gulls. He said, with a gay mouth, I love you. Grow to know me. What are you now? If we could touch one another, if these our separate entities could come to grips, clenched like a Chinese puzzle. Yesterday I stood in a crowded street that was live with people, and no one spoke a word, and the morning shone. Everyone silent, moving. Take my hand. Speak to me. The second poem is called Homage to Literature. When you imagine trumpet-faced musicians blowing again, inimitable jazz no art can accuse, nor cannonadings hurt, or coming out of your dreams of dirigibles again see the unreasonable cripple throwing his crutch headlong as the headlights streak down the torn street, as the three hammerers go 1, 2, 3 on the stake, trip hammer poundings, and not a sign of new worlds to still the heart. Then stare into the lake of sunset as it runs boiling over the west, past all control, rolling, and swamps the heartbeat, and repeats sea beyond sea after unbearable suns. Think. Poems fixed this landscape. Blake, Donne, Keats. This is called Four in a Family. The father and mother sat, and a sister beside her. I faced the two women across the tables with, speaking. And all the time he looked at me, sorrowing, saying nothing, with his hard, tired breath. Their faces said, this is your home. And I never come home, I never go away. And they all answered, stay. All day the city turned about this room, and silence had remained between our faces. divisions outside to concentrate a world, tally here only to dead profits and losses. We follow barrier voices, and we go fast. Unknown to each other, they race. I turn away, no voice being strong enough to cry me stay. My sister, I wished upon you those delights time never buries, more precious than heroes. Strange father, strange mother, who are you? Who are you? Where have I come? How shall I prosper home? Now I'd like to read four very recent poems that each stand by themselves, and that sets them apart from the group which I will read after that, the last group. These are separate poems which in their own ways go on with some of the things in the poems that you have just heard. The first one is called A Birth. Lately, having escaped three kinds of death, not by evasion, but by coming through, I celebrate what may be true beginning, but new begun, and most without resource, stupid and stopped. How do the newborn grow? I am of them. Freshness has taken our hearts. Pain strips us to the source, infants of further life, waiting for childhood as we wait for form. So came I into the world of all the living, the maimed triumphant middle of my way, where there is giving needing no forgiving. So now the present that is here to say, nothing I wrote is what I must see written. Nothing I did is what I now need done. The smile of darkness on my song and my son. Lately emerged, I have seen unfounded houses, have seen spirits not opened, surrounded as by sun, and have among limitless consensual faces watched all things change. An unbuilt house inherit materials of desire, that stone and wood and air. Lit by a birth, I defend dark beginnings, waste that is never waste, most human giving, declared and clear as the mortal body of grace. Beginnings of truth in life, the rooms of wilderness where truth feeds. Art, even mine, praising even the past in its pieces, my tear flesh beckoner who brought me to this place. This is called Body of Waking. Make and be eaten, the poet says. Lie in the arms of night-long fire to celebrate the waking, wake. Burn in the day-long light and praise even the mother unappeased
even the father of desire. Blind go the days, but joy will see agreements of music. They will wind the shaking of your dance. No more will the ambiguous arm wave spell confusion to the blessing given. Only and finally declare, among the purest shapes of grace, the waking of the face of fire, the body of waking, and the skill to make your body such a shape that all the eyes of hope shall stare, that all the cries of fear shall know, staring in their bird-pierced song. Lines of such penetration make that shall bind our loves at last. Then from the mountains of the lost, all the fantasies shall wake, strong and real and speaking, turn wherever flickers your unreal. And my strong ghost shall fade and pass. My love start fiery as grass. Wherever burn my fantasies, wherever burn my fantasies. This is a poem called F.O.M., the initials of Matheson, a poem written the day of his death. It was much stronger than they said, noisier. Everything in it more colored, wilder, more at the center calm. Everything was more violent than ever they said, who tried to guard us from suicide and life. We in our wars were more than they had told us. Now that descent figures stand about the horizon, I have begun to see the living faces. The storm, the morning, all more than ever they said. Of the new dead, that friend who died today, angel of suicides, gather him in now. Defend us from doing what he had to do, who threw himself away. This is called The Return. An idea ran about the world, screaming with the pain of the mind, until it met a child who stopped it with a word. The idea leaned over those newborn eyes and dreamed of the nature of things, the nature of memory and the nature of love, and forgave itself and all men. Quieted in a sea of sleeping, the idea began its long return. Renewed by the child's sea-colored eyes, remembered the flesh, smiled, and said, I see birds, spring, and the birthplace, unknown by the stable stone. I know light, and I know motion, and I remember I am not alone. The idea voyaged nearer my breathing, saying, come, balance, come into the love of these faces and forces. Find us our equilibrium. And the child stirred, asking his questions. The idea grew more fleshly and spoke. Beaten down I was. Down I knew very long. Newborn I begin. And the child went on asking his questions. The idea journeying into my body returned, and I knew the nature of one, and could forget one, and turn to the child,
and whole could turn to the world again, until the pain turns into answers, and all the masters become askers, and all the victims again doers, and all the sources break in light. The child goes alive, asking his questions. One more poem that I'd like to read, called Hang Before Storm. This sky is unmistakable, not lurid, not low, not black. Illuminated in bruised color, limitless to the noon, full of its floods to come. Why don't I stop for a moment, and will you all come in? I'll start again. Would you like to come in now? All right, fine. This poem is Hang Before Storm. This sky is unmistakable, not lurid, not low, not black. Illuminated and bruised color, limitless to the noon, full of its floods to come. Under it, field, wheels, and mountain, the valley scattered with friends, gathering in live-colored harvest, filling their arms, not seeming to hope, not seeming to dread, doing. I stand where I can see, holding a small pitcher, coming in toward the doers and the day. These images are all themselves emerging. They face their moment, love or go down. A blade of the strong hay stands like light before us. The sky is a torment on our eyes. The sky will not wait for this gold, and it will not wait for form. There is hardly a moment to stand before the storm. There is hardly time to lay hand to the great earth, or time to tell again what power shines past form. One of the splits of our time, one of the sets of opposites that have been handed to us as if they were true opposites, among a great many others, among the left-handed, right-handed sets of opposites that go into good or evil, light and dark, war and peace, thought and emotion, body and soul. Another one of these false opposites has been reality and emotion. And one of the things before us, any of us who write, or indeed any of us who read or use words at all, that is all of us, is the question of how to deal with the emotions, emotionally, without any loss of the truth in reality. And at the same time, how to do what is called thinking impartially, without loss of emotion. And this split, among the many splits which so quickly become false, has been one of the two-sided things that I've had to think about while I've been doing a book that is almost finished now, that is called Tree of Rivers, that is partly in prose scenes, partly in quotations cut in,
partly in poems cut in at moments of climax of the book. And it is from that book that I would like to read you as much of the first section as I can today. A great deal of the material of the book is centered on the materials of the life of Wendell Willkie. And it has seemed to me that in his life and in his attempts toward power and the defeat and recoil each time that he tried for power and became, I think, unreal to himself in trying for it, and in the great leap, imaginative leap, that was made after almost each of those defeats, and in the journeys, and in the closeness to the ideas of power as they have developed in this country and in this time, ideas of power in industry, in water and electric power, in power for war, in nuclear energy, and in the struggle for power in a single person's image of the world. These are some of the meanings that go through all of this. But in the very beginning, in the childhood and in the life as a student of a young man in the Middle West coming out of a boom town, this is some of what happens. Waking at night, past trees, seeing the towers of fire leap up superb and blue, a slight motion in the intense sky at the tip of the flame, lick, lick, giving a little with the winds aloft, roaring up, gas burning from underground, or pride, through hot clover, through the dream corn, chieftains gathering, closing in, distinct again with all their silver tufted feathers, their gold-white tufted feathers, past the deep gold dust of roads, into the forest air, dark and full of scents and swamp flowers, among pawpaw, sassafras, and the archaic Indiana ferns, the cool brown creek making the child's arm underwater white and berry long. Out far, on the branch, he looks down at the station with the army train pulling in, alongside the platform in the middle of summer. Shoulders, the cocky caps, and the guns like stalks hardened below the branch he grips, full of instant power. Down into the throats of horns and the spike of the flag. The Royal Company breaking ranks, invading the cars of the train, reappearing at all the windows, with their heads and arms leaving the train for one more look. The length of the red train waves all its hands. Nothing happens. The big soldiers call one more message home. Nothing happens. The crowd at the station waits and waits. Suddenly something like an idea sweeps over them and they take out their handkerchiefs. Long strokes of rifles on the train platforms. Glitter of white confetti and glass. The tears falling slowly and the glittering handkerchiefs. Out far on the branch, he hangs on, looking down at both crowds. The lucky ones have a gun or a branch or a brass trumpet to hold. The band leader tries not to keep watching for the engineer to signal. Will nothing start this train? The band leader lifts a stick of silver, perhaps music. A boom town, breathing a flame of its own, the excitements, the certainty of wildness, of the next morning with everything expanded a little, the factories coming in to build, the map of the town staked out like a gambling table. These fields might as well be green bays. The school teacher turned lawyer is now a real estate man. His strong children all born and changing fast, the town darkening. The brick and stacks smoking and darkening. The whole thing riding fast, riding high, the crest of the boom. That speed and taste and blood, it makes you want somehow to match it, to live breakneck from then on.